The Nature Podcast is supported by Nature Plus, a flexible monthly subscription that grants immediate online access to the science journal Nature and over 50 other journals from the Nature portfolio. More information at go.nature.com/plus.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Why is light so far?
Like, it sounds so simple.
They had no idea.
But now the data speaks.
I find this not only refreshing, but at some level astounding.
Nature.
Welcome back to the Nature Podcast. This week, it's our annual festive spectacular. There'll be games.
There'll be seasonal science songs.
And we'll be hearing about some of the people who have shaped science this year. I'm Nick Petrichow.
And I'm Noah Baker.
So it's the end of the year and we have our usual festive show. We have plenty coming up. Later on, we'll be hearing about Nature's 10, Nature's annual list of people who have had an impact on science, and we'll be having a festive quiz by the one and only Shamini Bundell.
But let's start the show with a song. This is Artemis and Dart. It's about some big space missions, and it's set to a tune we think you might recognise.
Artemis and Dart. Artemis and Dart. Artemis and Dart. Projects from NASA Felicidad. One's building defense from potential threats. The other is meant to open access to space women. It's been a year for some big space missions, from Earth defense to lunar ambition. There's asteroids and moon expeditions, and they've captured all our hearts. First Artemis 1, it's time to get on. White something smells warm, it's leaking somewhere, a seal, oh God. Okay, we'll leave soon, we're off to the moon. Wait a month soon, let's try again in a month or two. Artemis has been a slow space mission. Delays will come when there's high ambition. But it's all worth it when there is ignition, and the journey then can start. Now let's turn to Dart. It's had no false starts and crashed at the heart of an asteroid. It really hit hard. To deflect its course, it took a great force to prevent the worst annihilation of the Earth and us. The asteroid didn't pose any threat, but Chicxulub isn't one you forget. Now maybe NASA can stop the one next and protect us from the start. Artemis and Dart. Artemis and Dart. Artemis and Dart. Project from NASA Felicidad.
That was Artemis and Dart, performed by Phil Self, with lyrics by me, Noah Baker. Thanks also to Pablo Arguelles, Victoria Manzoli, and Flor Croster for their help with the song.
I do really like this rendition of Feliz Navidad. But now it's time to get excited and start cheering with our live studio audience as we've got the festive quiz.
Welcome to the Nature Podcast annual end of year quiz. I am your host, Shamini Bundell. Now allow me to introduce our three competitors for today. We have Nick Petrichow.
Hello, I'm here to crush you all once again. I've never done that. I've never won, so I don't know why I said that.
This year, your lucky year, Nick. We also have Lizzie Gibney.
Hi, I like to show up only sporadically throughout the year, but consistently for the end of year show.
Yes. And finally, we have Noah Baker.
I'm on a podcast all the time, but I've never been in the fun show, so now I get to do it. I'm very excited.
Gosh. The quiz is obviously what everyone at Nature is working here for, just to get the chance to be in my end of year quiz. So I hope the competitors today won't regret that, because I have a bit of a challenge for you all in the form of redacted headlines. So I have taken the headlines from various Nature podcast stories throughout the year, and I have redacted all of the key words.
All of them.
Really? I mean, really quite a lot of them. Your job is obviously guess what those words are and what the actual headline is. Now, this year, it's a sort of cooperative team game. But at the end, I will, as is somewhat traditional now, just arbitrarily decide on a winner, just depending on how I feel. So, you know, just try and impress me somehow. Just for some context here, I have been told that some of my previous quizzes might have been too easy. People Whoa. Might have gotten things
oh,
too
no.
quick, maybe just guessing things straight away. So, yeah, just to warn you, I have stepped it up this year. Now, these are all, as I said, headlines from the Nature podcast. They're generally ones that one of you three has been involved in or made in some way, or sometimes just ones that I've made just for my own benefit. So hopefully not too tricky. Does everyone understand the gist? Is everyone ready
mm-hmm.
to go?
See?
Yeah.
Then we shall begin. Your first headline, competitors. Blank, blank, blank makes blank after tense blank.
After tense?
Tense, T-E-N-S-E, not tense like at Glastonbury.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Might one of the words be Artemis?
Incorrect. There is no Artemis in this headline, although, ooh, you're kind of on the right track.
Yeah, I feel like launch. Is it a tense launch?
Oh, it was a tense launch, indeed. It was blank, blank, blank makes blank after tense launch.
I mean, JWST launched on Christmas Day last year, so it could have just opened, unfurled at the beginning of the year.
I'm going to give you, from JWST, I'm going to give you the first three blanks, which are Webb Space Telescope. Makes blank after tense launch. Anyone want to fill in that final word?
Makes history.
History!
Yay!
Oh! Well done, indeed. So I did pick this because it was right at the beginning of the year. And yes, it had launched on Christmas Day 2021.
It's just been amazing all year. Absolutely incredible what was produced. And it was so like nerve-wracking. Like it cost so much money. Cost so much more than was originally planned, took so much longer, and then you have it going up into space and you're just like, please don't let this rocket be the one that blows up. And it didn't. God. Yay!
Yay. Also, you know, like Hubble, its predecessor, had to be fixed so many times for things that went wrong. I was just waiting for all the things that went wrong with JWST, and so far they haven't. It seems to be working pretty darn well.
Okay, let's not jinx it. Everyone touch which. Okay. Hashtag scientific. Well done. Okay, great start there from right back at the beginning of 2022. Okay, your next headline. Reviving blank, blank, blank after blank.
I know this one straight off.
I think I do as well.
I was trying to make them harder. Gosh darn it.
Is it that, okay, as the non-bio person, is it that when they bought, like, after death, there were like some organs that they managed to get working again?
Absolutely. Reviving blank organs, blank after death. Would anyone, you go on then, Nick and Noah, you know this one.
I mean, pigs are involved.
Reviving pig organs, blank after death.
Ours?
Is it 4 hours, yeah.
Hours. Yes. It was indeed hours.
Yes. So this is OrganX, right?
OrganX was the name of the device that was used to perfuse the pig to like revive the organs, and so yeah, it had this fluid, so it had a bunch of metabolites and different chemical compounds in it to sort of ease these organs to a sort of functioning state, but like a semi-functioning state, because they also had inhibitors and stuff in there as well. But yeah, it was a really interesting and quite strange story, and a lot of ethical quandaries about this as well. What does this mean about death and that sort of thing?
And a story which was very colloquially referred to by various people as the zombie pig story, which, of course, it wasn't a zombie pig.
We are but not it was allowed something to call
that
it
went around in pigs. Nature Towers, where people were saying, isn't that the zombie pig one? And everyone went, no, it's not.
No, no zombie pigs.
For clarity, the pigs never got up or anything like that. There was some twitching, though.
And that was Nick's story as well. So, you know, slight advantage to Nick there, hence knowing it straight off. But I feel like Lizzie put a good amount of contribution into that. Hey, look, I knew. Oh, I was trying to make it hard, and
okay, just right, do all on. Blanks.
Yeah, I should have done.
We're just such a dream team.
To the blank.
It's because we're so good. It's not because it's too easy.
Okay, right. Come on. I'm gonna get you with this one. Blank blank reveals a blank blank of blank blank.
Okay, that is
this
a lot of blanks.
Yeah,
you asked for it, people. Come on.
Is it? Fish. Is one of the words fish?
Yes, it's fish.
Yeah, it was fish.
What? Oh, I now know what this is.
He just knows what it... How did you... Nick Vegetow, what are you doing to me? That was all blanks and you've just gone fish.
It's not like fish was like a big science theme of the year either, is it?
Yeah. Oh, I remember all those stories about fish.
But this was an exciting moment. I think we can get to the exact headline, because this was a new fundamental sort of process in biology, right? So is another fish. One of the words cell?
No, it's fossils. No. Oh no! Is it my one that I did about
Nick
the new kind of
wrong.
Cell division?
So guessed accidentally right, and it wasn't what you thought. Oh no!
Let's throw another word in. What about the word new?
Fish
blank reveals a new blank of cell
new
blank.
Atlas.
Such a good guess for my stories, but it's not Atlas.
I do remember the whole headline
a new
now.
Type of cell.
Correct.
Maybe Nick should finish it, because this was a story he covered.
Fish skin reveals a new kind of cell division. So this was a story that I made a video of as well. It's a very colourful video, so I recommend, if you like pretty colours, checking it out. And basically, this team found that these cells were dividing without doing the normal duplication of DNA that happens. So each of the cells did not have an equal complement of all the DNA. They just took bits of it that they needed to produce skin very quickly. And they reckoned that this happened because of those stressful times when you're growing up and you just need a bit more skin.
We all remember those times.
Exactly. It's fascinating, because one of the things that really defines cell division usually is an awful lot of checks and balances to make sure that the cells divide appropriately and you don't end up with cells that are all have the wrong bits in them. But this just threw all of that out the window and was like, speed is all we care about. Quickly, lots of skin.
No, and that's a really interesting part that we didn't get to talk about on the podcast or the video, but they had no idea like why it's able to do this, because you need these checks and balances, because otherwise things can go wrong and you get cancerous cells. But that wasn't happening here. So there must be some other kind of check and balance that's occurring, but we don't know what.
Okay, final one, because I love how much the blank version of this sounds like a Just So story. How the blank blank got its blank.
I know this one as well.
No points to Nick. 0 points. Negative points. Nick, you've not made me happy during the quiz. You've been too good at it. I just said impress me. I didn't say by being good at the quiz, did I, Nick? No, no points for you.
Sorry.
Okay, so like a Just So story, is it an animal in the first blank blank?
No.
Is the word start in it?
Yes. How the blank blank got its start. It's not a fun Christmassy topic, but...
Coronavirus?
Similar, actually. It's not coronavirus, but it's in the same category of things, I would say.
Mpox?
Think older.
You're absolutely on the right
plague.
Park.
Plague. Bubonic plague.
Yes. Black death.
Black death.
Yeah. That's what we put in our title.
Don't you have ever gone that? Black death, yes!
Yes! Christmas fun!
Yeah, so this was a really interesting story where it was a collaboration between historians and molecular biologists and archaeologists and many more who were able to come together and find out where exactly the Black Death, as we think of it, especially the disease that swept across Europe in the sort of 14th century, where it got its start. And so, yeah, they used a number of different techniques and historical records to come up with this place in sort of central Europe in modern Kyrgyzstan.
Not as fun as the other Just So stories, but when Nature publishes its children's book, Little Fables, that will certainly be in there.
Death seems to be the most popular word this in all these
true.
Stories.
That wasn't deliberate. Thank you so much. I have failed you once again. I'm not going to declare a winner in this instance. I'm going to declare a loser. It's me.
I thought it was going to be me. I thought it was going to be Nick.
No, it's not. No, Nick knows all the headlines.
Germany, we were all ready to nominate Nick. No,
I can't, in good conscience, nominate Nick when the one thing that I was told was that sometimes people get the answers too quick. And guess what happened? Nick got all the answers immediately. But thank you so much for playing, and congratulations to you all three joint winners. We'll just have to hope that next year, the end of 2023, maybe I can revive my fallen reputation.
Revive your reputation after death.
Until then. After death.
Like a pig organ.
After death. Yes. Thank you very much. And I'll see you all
Thank
next
you.
Year.
Bye. Happy holidays.
Bye.
Later on, we'll be hearing about some more headline-making science, but right now, it's time for the research highlights, read by the one and only Dan Fox.
Need to shed some holiday pounds? Well, intermittent fasting can help with weight loss, but a return to normal eating often means putting the weight back on. Now, scientists have a potential explanation for this frustrating cycle. The composition of the gut microbiome. Researchers fed mice a calorie-restricted diet similar to intermittent fasting, and then let the animals eat as they pleased. As expected, the mice lost fat when their food was limited, but quickly put fat back on with normal feeding. Digging deeper, the team found that short-term calorie restriction led to an increase in lactobacillus bacteria in the gut, and that this enhanced the ability of the animals' intestinal tissues to absorb fat. However, if mice were given a high-protein diet after food restriction, this suppressed the growth of the bacteria, resulting in less fat accumulation in the mice. The authors say the findings suggest that eating high-protein meals after completing a diet could help people to maintain weight loss. If this research has inspired your New Year's resolution, you can read the full paper in Nature. An aerial survey has revealed a previously unknown wealth of Maya cities, towns, and villages in northern Guatemala. Researchers surveyed a lowland region near the Guatemala-Mexico border using LIDAR, a technique that records archaeological features and the contours of the Earth's surface. The survey revealed a dense web of more than 700 archaeological sites, including cities, small settlements, pyramids, reservoirs, courts for ball games, and 177 kilometers of a network of elevated paths. The interconnectedness of the sites, along with the labor required to build them, suggests that the lowlands were home to a unified Maya political system that thrived in the 1,000 years before the classic Maya period recognized by archaeologists, which began in 250 AD. This means that despite earlier ideas that the region was sparsely settled, the authors believe that there was in fact prodigious growth. Survey that paper in full in Ancient Mesoamerica.
To wrap up this year's festive show, it's time for our annual reflection of some of the people who have shaped science in the past 12 months. Joining me to do so is Richard Van Norden, one of Nature's features editors. Richard, hi.
Hello, Nick.
Well, thanks for joining me, Richard. So to do some reflection, the way we normally do it every year is we talk about Nature's 10.
But just so everyone is familiar, can you tell me what exactly is Nature's 10?
It's Nature's annual list of scientists who helped shape science this year. They played a key role in some of the major science stories of the year. And they're not the only scientists that matter this year, but they really represent some of the biggest things that happened in research. And we've got a really good mix of people this year.
No, indeed, there is a good mix of stories this year. The past couple of years when we've done this, the pandemic has kind of subsumed most of the stories. But there's been a lot of other big stories this year in science. So to start off with, I wanted to talk about the James Webb Space Telescope. And in Nature's 10 this year, you've highlighted one of the people who's played a key role in getting the telescope off the ground.
Yeah, we chose Jane Rigby, who is the JWST's Operations Project Scientist at NASA. And we picked her because she's really been responsible for leading the work to assess the telescope's performance and whether it will work in space. It's been quite incredible this year that, in fact, the James Webb Space Telescope launched last year, on Christmas Day 2021. But it's taken all that time, months and months, for everything to unfold in space and to check that it's working. So many things could go wrong. And she's really been in charge of this process.
And one thing Rigby hasn't wanted to talk about is the name of the telescope. The name has generated some controversy because it's named after James Webb, who worked in high-ranking government positions at a time when the US government persecuted LGBT plus people. And Rigby herself is LGBT plus. Can you tell me a little bit about this?
So, as you say, the name James Webb is very controversial, and there's been inquiries as to whether the name should be changed because of who it honours. For the moment, NASA has said that they are not going to change the name, but some astronomers are referring to the telescope as JWST, so as not to say the name. Now, Rigby herself identifies as queer, but she doesn't really want to talk about the telescope's name. However, she did talk to us about her activism in the LGBT plus community and says that that activism has sharpened her leadership in science. So, for instance, when she was a postdoctoral scientist in California, she helped to organize voters against a ballot proposition that would have banned same-sex marriage. And this, she says, helped her develop skills like how to manage and motivate people. So Rigby says that one of her personal role models is Frank Kameny, an astronomer who was fired from the US government in 1957 for homosexuality and went on to become a crusader for gay rights. Rigby said, I think, something very interesting about what ties together many LGBT plus people in astronomy. She said that there's a feeling of belonging and quotes that the universe doesn't reject me. She says there was a sense of being drawn to astronomy in part because of my queer identity. It was a feeling of being part of the universe and being part of the bigger story.
Well, speaking of being part of something, back down here on Earth, we had COP27, UN's annual climate conference. And one of the big stories that came out of this was after many years of wrangling, wealthy countries have finally agreed to foot the bill to pay for loss and damage caused by climate change. And this year in Nature's 10, we've chosen to highlight someone who's been fighting for this for a long time.
Yes, we've picked Salim al-Huq, who is a very well-known climate researcher in Bangladesh. He's kind of been, for more than a decade, the kind of unofficial leader of the idea that the high carbon emitters of the world have a financial responsibility to help the low emitting countries that face devastation as temperatures continue to rise. So it was obviously a triumph for everyone, but kind of a personal triumph for Salim al-Huq that we did see this loss and damage fund agreed at COP27 this year, although all of the details still have to be worked out.
No, certainly. And he himself is from Bangladesh, which has a long history of climate disasters. This year, we saw a great deal of flooding. So he's been no stranger to the sort of turmoil that climate change and international politics cause.
He has been instrumental in persuading the government of Bangladesh that it needed an environment department and needed to think about disasters like flooding that Bangladesh would suffer. And then he went on to establish a network of experts who work in something called community-based adaptation, the idea of helping communities find their own research-based solutions to problems like adjusting cropping patterns or like improving flood defences. So he's always said the communities themselves have to be in the driving seat. In the 1990s, he started to become active in climate negotiations as an advisor to climate vulnerable countries. And what he's always said, and this is where the loss and damage comes in, is that this is not aid. This is not donations. Because when money is given in aid, he says the power rests with the donor of the aid. Loss and damage is something else. It's about the idea that the polluter should pay for the pollution that they've done.
And this year at COP27, there was finally some agreement that this is something wealthy countries need to foot the bill for. But to bring it around to our next story, another big thing that happened this year was back in February, Russia invaded Ukraine. And we've talked about this on the podcast before, and we've said that for many ways, for science, this has been a story about energy. And related to that, you've chosen to highlight Svetlana Krakowska.
Yeah, I mean, who could we highlight to talk about Ukraine? It is, for nature, a bit of a science story. It's about much more than that, but it is about energy. It's also about the destruction of Ukraine's science system. And a person that we felt really was in the center of this story was Svetlana Krakowska. So she is responsible for leading Ukraine's delegation to the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. And she was actually attending a video meeting of the IPCC as the bombs were falling on 24th of February when Russia began its invasion of Ukraine. And she had to decide what to do. She describes herself as pretty shy, and she knew that the IPCC is not really a political body. Didn't want to undermine that. But she decided to talk on the closing day and told delegates that the war against Ukraine and human-induced climate change have connections and the same roots, that these roots are fossil fuels and humanity's dependence on them, and that the ease of receiving energy from burning coal, oil and gas has changed the balance of power in the human world. She got huge response to this. Lots of delegations voiced solidarity with Ukraine, including the representative of Russia, Oleg Anisimov, who actually at the time apologized for the attack. And she later got a huge number of messages of support. And essentially this year, although her family have not moved from Kyiv, she has, in fact, become a sort of spokesperson, a campaigner for climate action and for Ukraine.
And one thing when I was reading about her that I found quite interesting is she's actually relatively new to climate science.
Yeah, this is very interesting. Born in 1969, she studied meteorology in what is now St. Petersburg, and she actually became a cloud physicist. And she discovered the incipient field of regional climate modelling in the 2000s. And her first IPCC meeting was only 9 years ago in 2013. So it's kind of refreshing to see someone perhaps unwittingly become sort of a campaigner a bit later in their life and for research that they'd come to not that long ago.
I think we've just got time to talk about one more person. And whilst the pandemic is still ongoing, and we've actually featured a couple of COVID scientists in Nature's 10 this year, there's another virus that's been making headlines, monkeypox.
Yeah, we decided to highlight Dimi Ogoina, who is a researcher in Nigeria. And when he heard that monkeypox was spreading around the globe this year, he was like, oh, deja vu, because monkeypox turned up in Nigeria in 2017 for the first time there in nearly 40 years. And he was the first person to diagnose someone with a confirmed case of the disease, which, as we're talking, the disease has been renamed Mpox by the World Health Organization to reduce stigma, although the virus is still monkeypox. And so back in 2017, again, as with the current outbreak, although on a smaller scale, this epidemic in Nigeria, he found, seemed to be concentrated in urban areas and among young and middle-aged adult men, quite different from previous transmission patterns for Mpox. And he detailed how this pathogen was spreading in Nigeria. And in 2019, on the basis of what he'd seen, he and his colleagues said this might be spreading through sexual contact and it might be spreading more efficiently between people than we think. But people didn't really want to take it seriously. And this has all been quite prescient now. And the work's been cited a lot, and it tipped off health officials about the role of sexual contact in spreading this disease, although it's still very unclear whether the virus is, in the strict sense, sexually transmitted, meaning passed through bodily fluids. And so he was really sort of instrumental in doing all of this work, unheralded much earlier, and really it was not paid as much heed to as it should have been.
Yeah, he was able in a way to prepare the United States and Europe for the more recent outbreak ahead of time. But actually, while he's been able to do this, the situation hasn't really changed that much in Nigeria.
Right. Thankfully, the global outbreak is waning. But yeah, Nigeria doesn't have the drugs, the vaccines, and the surveillance resources that have helped to control the virus's spread in high-income countries. And Ogoina told us he's worried that the new attention and funding for Mpox will dry up and the disease will just revert to spreading as it has before in countries in Central and Western Africa. So he's trying to better understand how the disease is spreading in Nigeria. In theory, there's been just over 600 infections confirmed so far this year, but he and others think this is a massive underestimation because there isn't really the surveillance to track it. So it's not clear who is becoming infected with the virus and how they're infected. And he is warning the rest of the world not to be complacent about the continued spread of Mpox in Africa.
Well, it's certainly been an interesting year for science, and these people have been right at the heart of it. Listeners, we've only had time for these few people, but make sure you check out the show notes to find the full feature where you can read about all 10 people highlighted in Nature's 10. But for now, Richard, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks, Nick.
And that's it for this edition of the show and the last regular podcast of 2022. Thank you so much for listening over the last 12 months.
It's certainly been an interesting year for the podcast and for science. To highlight that and to keep you all cosy over the festive period, we'll have our annual clip show coming out soon, where the team have picked some of their favourite podcast stories. And then we'll be back in the new year with more news from the wide world of science.
For now though, here's one more song to play us out. This is Fairy Tale of Omicron, with lyrics written by Kerry Smith. It's performed again by Phil Self, but this time featuring Dominie Hooper. Imagine yourself a scientist in the lab on a cold Christmas Eve looking at GISAID.
It was Christmas Eve, babe, in the wet lab. A colleague said to me, won't see another one. She closed the laptop screen. But the variant came in. I turned my face away from the new acronym. God, it's another one. Came in at 1:30. I've got a feeling this night is hardly through. So happy Christmas. Still browsing GISAID. I can see a better time when there's no SARS-CoV-2.
BA4/5 or so, as quick as they came, they were replaced by more. Each new iteration supplied a mutation to the virus's receptor binding domain. But the boys in the ACTG lab are sequencing away as we build immunity for the next wave. We have not heard the last of you as the year ends.
No longer polemic to say it's endemic. Omicron won't affect the ways it can mutate.
With the girls of the ACTG lab still sequencing away as we build immunity for the next wave.
Sequence day and night.
We have- has found them.
I made this diagram. Your strains emerge and die. A nest of tangled lines. Each night I dream about you. As the folks of the ACTG lab keep sequencing away, as we build immunity for the next wave.
Deep dive into the world of science with Nature Plus. From the vastness of the distant star systems to the intricacies of infectious diseases due to climate change, we've got you covered. Enjoy access to over 55 cutting-edge journals, breaking scientific news, and over 1,000 new articles every month. Whether you're a seasoned researcher or just curious, Nature Plus simplifies complex studies. Plus, it's all available right at your fingertips on nature.com. Nature Plus. The key to unlocking the world's most significant scientific advances. Subscribe today at go.nature.com/plus.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.